All right, welcome to Planning Commission. We have Commissioner Moss joining us online. Thank you for being here. Commissioner Moss, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Thanks.
Great. We will start with any public comments. No public comments. We will move to agenda item 3, appointment of a chair and vice chair. Do we have a nomination for a chair? If someone doesn't do it, I'm going to nominate somebody.
Yeah, I'd like to nominate Brianna Larson as our chair.
All right, do we have a second?
Second.
All right, I will accept the nomination. So a motion? Okay. Is that now it's it? All in favor? Say aye.
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 Aye. All right.
Aye.
Thank you. I appreciate the trust and confidence and all the help that everybody gives me moving through some of the tricky things that I'm not totally sure how to navigate. So thank you, everybody. And then appointment of a vice chair. Do we have a nomination?
Who has it been?
Commissioner Holbrook. I nominate.
That's how important it is.
Commissioner Ward.
Yeah. All right. Do we have a second? Commissioner Ward.
Second.
Do you accept the nomination?
Oh, yes.
All right. Oh, yes. All in favor say aye.
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 All right. Thank you. Dun, 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 dun,
so
dun, dun, dun,
fast. Unless I lost the election, and then I would storm.
That's because before the meeting we went, you want to do it? You want
to
do it?
Yeah.
Yeah. You just see me out there just breaking stuff.
I'm going to sign it because it will be a peaceful transfer.
That's right.
All right. Agenda item 4, public hearing, consideration of city code amendment in compliance with state law regarding the regulation of subdivisions. Sherry. It's not working. Am I just not close enough to it? What if I get very serious? Okay.
Okay, here we are, finally to the finish line, almost. Okay, so I'm not gonna spend a lot of time going over all the individual chapters. I'm just going to give you some time to let me know if you have any corrections that you have found that we need to correct. But I will go over a few things that have changed since the copy you got before Christmas and also the copy that you got last night. There were a couple of little things. So to go over the first chapter in Title 13, Chapter 1, the general provisions. So this is a general summary of what is in this chapter. So it defines the general responsibilities of city staff, the planning commissioners, city council. It establishes our administrative land use authority, and it the administrative land use authority as staff for minor subdivisions and the planning commission for all other subdivision. The chapter also provides for an appeal process for subdivision decisions to the designated appeal authority and district court, and provides a time limit for that appeal. So since the copy that you had last, you might have had this in your copy last night, but this since the copy from Christmas, I spoke with the city attorney yesterday. And on page 3, beginning on line 98, he wanted me to insert this language, and it was based on a question that I had about everywhere in the code where we say city engineer or designee or public works director or designee. I'm like, do we have to say or designee every time we say that? And he suggested that we put this section in that actually takes care of that very situation. So throughout the rest of the code, we don't necessarily have to have designee. So if I missed it anywhere, then we're good because it's covered. So it's basically just some of that lawyer talk, that section. Any questions about that? Are there any corrections, questions about chapter 1?
Any input? Looks like no.
Okay.
Thank you, Sherry.
Oops, I went too far. Chapter 2 is the administrative and application chapter. So it talks about the authority to regulate subdivisions, defines what subdivisions are and what types of subdivisions require approval. This contains a lot of existing language from Title 10, Chapter 7. And then it's been updated to meet, to conform to state statute. So we have some new languages that address some other things about the transfer of land without subdivision approval. It can be voidable. So if somebody subdivides their land into lots without getting approval for a subdivision and start selling those lots, we can actually void those sales because they're not legal. I've never ever seen that happen. It has happened, but it happened back in like the 50s. So when I was working for Utah County, we had some of those types of subdivisions that had happened a very, very long time ago where people had recorded subdivisions that were not approved, and they were. I wasn't even born yet. I didn't even know I was going to grow up to be a planner then, so it's all good. I haven't made any other changes to this section. Couple of the other things it does, just to highlight them, are talks about when building permits can be issued, and it's not until all infrastructure is installed, including pavement. In the state code, there's a statement that says that cities cannot withhold a building permit for infrastructure that has been bonded for, unless it's critical infrastructure. So it's always interpreted that means if you get to install all the infrastructure and you have a live water line, you have live fire hydrants, and you have a passable surface under the building code and fire code, then we would issue building permits. So what we, rather than saying that, we want to say that you're required to have the paving all the way in, but we can grant an exception so that if it's March and they want to start pulling permits, but the asphalt plants don't open until April 15th, there's not much chance that they're going to damage the infrastructure that's already there, and we can get those building permits moved ahead of time. But if, you know, if it's like October and we're just moving it, they've closed all the asphalt plants and we're just moving into winter, building over the winter months without a paved surface and being able to keep the snow off it would really just damage the road base and everything that's there anyway, and they'd have to redo it in the spring. So we want to be able to say no in those instances because we don't think it would be safe. So that's the clarification on that, and that was advice from our city attorney. And then there's a specifically, we do prohibit occupancy until the paving were completed. So if somebody was really fast at building in that 1 month and got the whole house done before it was paved, they couldn't get occupancy until the road was paved. Any questions, comments, or corrections on chapter 2?
Any comments from the commission? Looks good. Thanks, Sherry.
Okay. It helps that we had all those work sessions. Chapter 3 is our concept plan chapter. So this is a change under the state code with the new changes. We are not allowed to require concept plan for single family, duplex, or townhome subdivisions. But we do want to require them for commercial or industrial subdivisions and for multifamily subdivisions. So if we were doing a subdivision like a Village Station where it has four lots that contain high-rise structures, those are actually under the building code considered commercial structures, though under land use we consider them residential. Under the building code they're considered land or commercial structures, so they would not be exempt from the concept plan requirement. And so that's the major change in this. Just kind of updates that process and specifies that if you do want a concept plan review, it's optional if you're doing a single family or a twin home development. Any questions on chapter 3? Was that chapter 3? Yeah.
Nope. Anybody? No? All right.
Chapter 4 is a minor subdivision process. So this section defines a subdivision of less than 10 lots on that has existing infrastructure. So this would be infill in a single family neighborhood. Let's say you had somebody who had a 1 acre lot and 400 feet of frontage, and they wanted to divide a lot off for their kid. We could do a administrative minor subdivision that would go through staff It would make the process a lot quicker and easier for them. There isn't any additional road dedications that are required. They're not having to extend their services from a long distance and doing off-site improvements. And that's a provision that's provided for in state code. So we're just matching the language in state code on that. Any questions on minor subdivisions?
That sounds great to be able to move those into just administrative.
Yep.
Thank you.
The next task will be to move all those conditional uses into.
Yeah. Thank you.
Looking forward to that being done. Okay, chapter 5. This is kind of the meat and potatoes chapter. So this is everything related to preliminary and final subdivision approval. So everything that's not classified as a minor subdivision would be a standard subdivision. It combines the language from Title 10 in Chapter 3 about the processes, so the meetings you have to go to, that type of stuff, and then the other regulations in Chapter 7. So it's been updated to reflect the state code. So one of the things in the changes of the state code is that you're only allowed to have 4 review cycles with a subdivision. So if I receive a preliminary subdivision plat, the development review staff and all of that includes city engineer, everybody, special service districts, review it. We give the red lines back to the applicant. First, those red lines have to be cited specifically. Everything we request, how we have to say what section of the code or what section of the standards and manual that rule comes from and why you have to change it. And then we have to put it in an index. And then the developer has to respond to that, and they have to respond in writing in that index to say how they have addressed every one of the items that we sent out for correction. If they fail even one of those items to complete them to address it, then the review cycle is not complete and it does not start the next review cycle. So for instance, the reason why there would be more than one review cycle would be one of the comments was you didn't include a storm drainage plan. And so then the next time it comes back in, they give us the storm drainage plan, but it has corrections. It's going to need corrections because it hasn't even been reviewed the first time because it was non-existent on the first review. So that's how that would happen. And we have divided that into 2 of the review cycles on preliminary and 2 of the review cycles on final. I was directed by the city attorney to do it that way in one of the meetings that we had last fall when we were talking about the updates of the subdivision ordinance. And then he informed me yesterday that they're looking at changing that again to say that those 4 review cycles have to be in whatever process is engineering heavy. Our engineering heavy section is at preliminary. So he's going to probably want us to change that before next week when it goes to city council. So that may be the only modification before, or that'll be a modification before it goes to city council, or it could come back as another code amendment if they change the state code to say that specifically. So this section also clarifies some other things that we think have been lacking in our current subdivision ordinances, like the expiration of deadlines for approvals when preliminary plats expire, when final plats expire. Like in our current subdivision ordinance, I think it says that after final plat approval, they have 30 days to record the subdivision plat. That never happens. That's almost impossible to meet that deadline. So we've changed those deadlines so that they're more realistic and something that we can actually implement and more clearly defined. It also defines what needs to be shown on preliminary plat and final plats. And then one of the things it does too is under the state code, only preliminary plan review can be reviewed by the planning commission. So it cannot go to city council. Preliminary and final cannot go to the city council, and final cannot come to the planning commission. So they've asked us to designate an administrative land use authority for each one of the steps. So for preliminary plan, that would be the planning commission. For final, that would be the developments to review staff. So it, essentially it would be me, but it would be with the advice and consent of the other development review staff, because the city engineer has to still sign off on the plat. The city attorney still has to sign off on it. The special service districts still have to make sure everything's good. So that's been written into that. This section also then provides some mechanisms for bonding related to the infrastructure installation. That's been updated to conform to state code into what may or may not be bonded for. So state code only allows us to bond for essential infrastructure unless there's something that is in a part of a development agreement. So if we entered into a development agreement because a P district that they were going to install a playground, then we could make them bond for that because they agreed to it in the development agreement. But otherwise, we can't really require a bond for landscaping. And then it also requires that we provide a minimum of two forms of bond that are acceptable to the city. We have already had more than two forms. I think we have three forms in this section, so no real change in that. Any questions about Chapter 5 or comments, corrections, concerns?
Chapter 5, any input on Chapter 5? All right, thank you, Sherry.
Chapter 6, this is the PUD condo and recreational vehicle subdivision and mobile home subdivision chapters. So this is a lot of existing language that's from Title 10, Chapter 7, Section 6, I think. I think they're in three different sections and I put them all together. Okay, so this section, basically what it does is does a few things that we don't have under our current code. It defines the specific things that can be waived in a PUD or modified and varied. Those are those numbers that we talked about, like if you're doing a townhome development, some of the standards like the road must be this wide, the perimeter set must be this, what are the distances between the buildings, those types of things. That's also where I put in some regulations about garbage removal, and if they don't have a through street, they can't have individual garbage cans, they need to provide dumpster service. If we can't get a garbage truck into the development to pick up the cans, then they have to do a garbage. So that's a new thing. Provision for mail kiosks, that was a suggestion from Commissioner Jorgensen. A couple of the other changes from the December copy that you had are on page 1, starting on line 23. And so this was a insertion from the city attorney. One of the concerns the city manager had when they read some of the language was about the language where it was kind of fluffy when it talked about why we approve PUDs, and the city manager was a little bit concerned that a resident who didn't like a PUD was approved if they didn't think it met that criteria, that they could tell us we should have denied it. Or the city attorney came up with this language that basically just says the city may apply the flexibility of planned unit development regulations when the development through its designs and establishment will provide the benefits that may include but are not necessarily limited to the following. So it's not saying anymore that you have to meet all of these seven criteria. It's saying that they may meet that, and that may be the reasons why we would allow it to be a PUD. On page 9, line 319, so this one is specifically a recommendation from the city attorney, because he said if we're going to do a PUD where we are modifying any of the agreement or any of the standards, deviating from the standard designs, that we should do a formal development agreement. So this basically just says that we can enter into a formal development agreement with the specific PUD performance standards in are imposed or there's a deviation in design standards. Because he said that's just good practice to do. And then on page 16, starting on line 623, again, that's the same verbiage there about when we may enter into a development agreement, but this one is, instead of for PUDs, this is for mobile home subdivisions. So if we bury anything when they do a mobile home subdivision, then they would like to have a development agreement. Any questions on chapter 6?
Thank you.
All right, chapter 7 is the plat amendment chapter. This is fairly standard. A lot of this is existing language from our chapter 7. It does update a few things. Our current code is kind of backwards. It says that when we amend a plat, that we're supposed to hold a public hearing, but then it says when we're amending a plat that vacates a street or public utilities, we don't have to hold a public hearing, which is the exact opposite of state code. State code says that you hold a public hearing. So that's the way we've always operated it, as if we were in conformance with state code. We haven't required public hearings just on regular plat amendments that don't vacate or change a public utilities in our street. So I'm just cleaning that language up to make sure it's consistent with state code. And the plat amendments are designated to the Planning Commission as the land use authority. Lot line adjustments are approved by staff, and that's currently how we do it in Title 10. Any questions on plat amendments or lot line adjustments? Okay, Chapter 8 is the subdivision chapter, is the subdivision design chapter. So this actually just talks about, that the subdivision layout has to conform to the general plan, that they need to try and preserve natural features, and they need to make connections to existing streets. It defines what lots, shape, size, and how they should be addressed, what the building buildable areas are, how those are defined. Flag lots. Now, I know you recommended that we get rid of flag lots. The DRC was concerned about taking it out because we do have some flag lots that still need regulations that have to be followed. So, and the DRC frankly felt like that we still should have flag lots. And so they put me in this really weird, awkward position right now. So we will move forward with a recommendation to remove flag lots to the city council, and then we'll let the city council decide whether or not we should have flag lots. So, but I will certainly reflect in my staff report the Planning Commission's position on that, and I will let the city manager reflect his position on flag lots. that also defines the blocks, so the minimum and maximum block lengths, mid-block roadways, standards, all those things we talked about, streets with the pavement widths and the right-of-way widths, defining the dead-end streets and requiring a couple of updates to conform to state code. So subdivisions or fire code, subdivisions that provide access to 30 or more lots have to have two means of ingresses. So that means there has to be a road in and a road out. There can't just be one road and that loops back around on itself, because that creates a choke point, especially if you're in a fire prone area like an urban wildland interface. People could be stuck up there if there were an event and not be able to evacuate. So that's the whole purpose of that. So we've just added that to the code so that it is in the design part. So in the landscaping section, we've added some requirements for vegetation of cuts and fills, some preservation of the existing vegetation and trees where possible, that they have to comply with the geologic hazard studies recommendations in relationship to landscaping, and that they have to follow the water efficiency landscaping. Also, as we discussed in one of the previous work sessions, we've updated the cross section for Highway 89, for Redwood Road on landscaping for the first 24 feet behind the curb. Right now, it requires a solid wall along Redwood Road. As you know, we've done other developments where we didn't want the solid wall, so we've allowed a decorative metal fence, and so I've made a provision for that to be in there. And then as I was looking at that, I was thinking about, well, Highway 89, if we have development along Highway 89, we probably want to talk about what that landscaping looks like, because I don't think we would want to have a 6-foot masonry wall against, right up against the, or close to the curb on Highway 89. And so I've added a similar cross section for Highway 89 to the Redwood Road cross section. The other sections define utilities and easement, kind of cleans up some of the language and some of the numbers that we require for public utility easements. And then it addresses dedication of right-of-ways for water courses, streets and trails, and restrictions on solar access. So they can't build buildings so close to each other that that the neighboring building can't get access to the sun, essentially. Any questions or comments or amendments to this section?
Sherry, would it be helpful if we discussed changing our desire to eliminate flag lots so that you can move that forward to the City Council without a hiccup there?
That's up to you.
Does anyone on the commission feel strongly about wanting to desire those flag lots, or could we discuss? Anyone have any input on that?
My memory just serves that it was kind of driven around how many opportunities there are left.
Right. And so you're saying here that we can't, Sherry, you're saying that we still need to have to provide the existing flag lot. So even if it's just one or two, there still needs to be code
and language.
So there's
some rules in there that talk about how the road is paved and the slope of road for the driveway in. So we don't want to just take those out because we have flag lots that have been approved but haven't been built on yet.
Because I am with Commissioner Holbrook that I remember our discussion coming around that there was like very few of them, and we were trying to minimize all of the verbiage we had previously had.
But if the City Council agrees with you that we don't want any new flag lots, then I can fix the language and say no new flag lots will be approved. Here are the regulations for existing flag lots. I mean, I can massage the language if they agree with the Planning Commission.
Okay, that sounds good. Just give it to them to make the decision. All right.
That's kind of where I was going with that. So I provided the language, and then that's a discussion we can have with them, and I'll amend the language then depending on what their, whatever their motion.
Perfect. That sounds great. Anybody else have any comments or input on that Chapter 8? All right. Thanks, Sherry.
Moving right along. So Chapter 9 is the essential improvements chapter. So this just talks about the specifics for, you know, stormwater lines, water and sewer lines, underground utilities, that type of thing, fencing and fencing or piping of hazards, fencing ditches, things like that, monuments, and then provides a mechanism for payback agreements. So just so you know what a payback agreement is, that's when if a subdivision required 8-inch water lines to provide the appropriate service level to the development, but we expected a new development on the other side of them that we might need in order to serve their development and the next development to have a 10-inch line, then the city could pay, enter into a payback agreement where the city would essentially pay for that 2 extra inches of water line to be installed. We can recoup it back from the next developer, but then that developer isn't bearing the cost of providing services to the next development. That's essentially what a payback agreement is. Right. Any questions on Chapter 9?
Sherry, yeah. So the one section had changed a little bit since the version we saw earlier. As I recall, there was some provision, and we talked about it on 10-year interval for 10-year design storm kind of thing. Now it talks about retention of 80% storm. So I assume the emphasis here is that more of the water is to be retained on site through the drainage system versus what that previous one maybe contemplated where you were just trying to get it off site.
Yeah, so the stormwater practices now have changed where they try to keep the majority of the water on site, or if they have to remove it from the site, then all that's really important is the rate of that water entering into the public storm drain system. And so by restricting the outflow and providing sufficient detention, then that deals with those storms. So the city engineer looked through all of these, and she changed the language as she felt it was necessary.
Yeah, I like the gist of the concept. It makes good sense.
Yep. Thanks. I can't take credit for it, but I can explain it a little bit.
All right, any other comments on Chapter 9? It looks great.
Okay, so there's three other ones. So what you have before you in paper tonight, I had submitted that in the packet, but there are a couple of changes from last night's version after working with the city engineer today on some definitions. So the first thing is not in the definitions. In our current subdivision ordinance in the recreational vehicle section, it talks about where recreational vehicles can be stored in your personal yard. And it's a really odd place for it to be, because every time there's a code enforcement issue, we have to remember where was that at, because it's not in the regular regulations. It's in the subdivision chapter, and it doesn't make sense. So I came across that, and I was like, wait, we need to move that. And so I decided the best place to put it would be in this section that the code enforcement officer uses about the maintenance and condition and appearance of properties, because that is significant to where you park recreational vehicles. It also goes on beyond the section that's shown here about abandoned, wrecked, and inoperable vehicles. And if you have, how many parts of inoperable vehicles can you have, and where do they have to be parked, and those type of things. So I felt like it kind of went along with the recreational vehicles. And so the language is exactly the same as it is in the code. It's just been moved to this section so that it can be found easier. Then in the definition section, so I worked with the city engineer today to kind of go over and propose some changes to the definitions that would apply now that we're changing some of the way that the subdivision ordinance works. And so the first one has to do with the buildable area. And this one talks about we wanted to define the buildable area, because right now the way the buildable area is written in the code, it says that it's the portion of the lot remaining after the required yards or easements have been provided. And then if every part of the yard that has less than 30% slope on average, and some other stuff that doesn't really work. And so we decided that this would be the best way to go about it. We wanted to define the buildable area as the portion of the lot that remains after the required yards, utility easements, scenic easements, or other rights of ways have been provided. The area designated as the buildable area on a building or building envelope on an approved subdivision plat, which is less than 30% slope, and any portion of the lot defined as not defined as non-buildable. Okay, I'm missing a word there. So I need to, any portion of the lot not defined as non-buildable. And then we decided we needed to define what non-buildable area is. And the non-buildable area of a lot, which is more important for us to know, is any portion of a lot that's defined as non-buildable under Title 10, Chapter 12, which is our geologic hazards chapter. Any portion of a lot defined as non-buildable by an approved geotechnical study. Any portion of a lot with slopes which are 30% or greater. A lot of times, and then number four, this one comes in, any portion of a lot included within a defined building envelope on a plat which have slopes which are 30% or greater. That deals with existing subdivision lots that we have that have building envelopes on them, but we have slopes greater than 30% inside those building envelopes, because building envelopes are usually square, and slopes that are 30% or greater are not usually square on the lot. So sometimes a little corner of that buildable envelope will actually be over 30%. So we want to make it clear that if you have 30% slopes or greater inside that building envelope, that still is an area you cannot build on, even though it's platted as part of the building envelope. And then the last one was that any portion of the lot with known or reasonably known geologic hazards. The next elimination from the definitions is the definition for conditional use development. Under our current code, all subdivisions are considered conditional use, or CUPs, essentially, and that is not in accord with state code, which says all subdivisions are administrative, not conditional. Flag lot, I've just removed the section referring to 10-7-8 because that's not going to be relevant, and it's really unneeded anyway. It's unnecessary. The next insertion is flood control words and phrases. One of the problems that we have is we have Title 10 that deals with flood control, and it's very heavily regulated by FEMA. They tell us exactly what the definitions need to say. And so we don't want to have duplicate definitions that if they come and change something that this is how you define a floodplain, that or this is how you define a finished floor elevation or something like that, that we have to go back and define it in two different places, because sometimes that's when they get mixed up. So we want to just refer every flood control term back to that title, because all of those sections, those definitions are in that section, which includes floodway. It's defined in those sections. And right now, under the land use code, it's an area designated by the Planning Commission and City Council that's subject to inundation. And Planning Commission and City Council, you're not experts at where the floodways should be designated on plats. So we're just going to take that out of this section, and it's now designated where it's supposed to be to the city engineer. The integrated development plan, I've taken out some language, the last couple sentences in that section, and also changed where it says the land development plan is approved by the city council, because it's not. It's now approved by the city administrative land use authority. So change that. On the next page, there's in this section and another one, there's sections where they've called out the zoning administrator. We don't have a zoning administrator, so I've replaced that with community development director. We've taken out the definition for, or changed the definition for lot restricted. So this is a clearer definition that meets all of the standards. So if any of these exist, a lot shall be designated as restricted when any of these conditions exist. It's located within the sensitive lands area overlay zone. It's noted as restricted on a recorded subdivision plat, because we already have subdivision plats that have been approved. It has an average slope of 15% or greater. It contains critical slopes, and critical slopes are defined in the geologic hazards ordinance. A lot with known, suspect, or probable geologic hazards. If it's a lot with critical wildlife habitat, if it has critical drainage channels or other natural features, and I've got to move the or down one line, it contains other vital infrastructure. So let's say it might be a restricted lot because it has a PRV valve or something in the public utility easement on it, and so we might want to restrict it because we don't want to have them tear that out. We just want to have an extra layer of review. And then 9, or having been designated by the city engineer as restricted. And then I'm eliminating the definition for lot unrestricted, because essentially if it's restricted, it meets all of those. It's any one of those things can restrict it. If it's doesn't have any of those things, it's an unrestricted lot. So there's not really a necessary to have a definition for unrestricted lot. On the next page, on line 185, it talks about usable open space, and if it's like a balcony or a rooftop, it is saying that it has to be deemed safe by the zoning administrator. Now, I'm not replacing that with community development director because I'm not an expert on that. In order for it to be safe, it would be deemed by the building official to be safe under the building code. So I'm changing that to building official. Permanent monument on the next page has some ambiguity that just doesn't make sense when talking about permanent monuments. First, it has a regulation in it, and I don't like regulations and definitions because that's when we miss the regulation. We have in other chapters of subdivision ordinance defined and in our specifications manual what a monument has to be, but we have existing monuments that were put in years and years ago that don't meet that standard. They're still monuments, even though they don't meet the standard, they're still monuments. And so that's why we took that section out, because not all monuments meet them. All new monuments will have to meet those standards, but not all old monuments do. On the following page, line 239, changing the definition for subdivider. I always hated that term, it's developer, so I've taken that out of any reference in the subdivision ordinances and change it to developer, so I'm changing the definition just for developer. Any questions on any of those definitions? And I pulled out all of the other definitions that have anything to do with subdivisions in case something popped up to us as we were looking through them and we needed to change them. I wanted you to be able to review them.
So, Sherry, on that first part on section 42 on the RV parking, is that on the parking of unoccupied RVs, is that existing language that's in the code that's just been removed here?
It is already in the code. It's just been in a weird spot.
Okay. And then what's the gist of, so you can park it on a private residential lot, provide the parking complies with the standard in the title. What's the gist of where does it normally fall short if it wouldn't meet that?
It has to be parked on a hard surface. So okay. You can't store it on your lawn in the backyard or your front yard lawn.
But it wouldn't have to be on the side or anything like that, right?
We don't have that in there right now. We just say that it can be in your driveway.
Yeah.
In your front yard, in your driveway, but it has to be on a hard surface.
Yeah. Well, the reason I ask is, like the subdivision we had the covenants, and they had a bunch of restrictions. I know they're not enforceable by the city, but anyway, that's where that kind of stuff ended up being.
Yeah.
Because the whole idea was not to have the RVs in that particular subdivision parked out front. You know, they should be on the side or in the back.
Yeah, we don't have that in our ordinance, and I do know that there are some cities that do. South Jordan does. Where it cannot be at all in the front yard. It has to be on the side of the house and completely behind the front facade. So, but we don't have that in our ordinance. If that's something that you think that we should have, we can certainly.
Well, I don't, because I park my trailer when I have to wash it and do maintenance on it in my front driveway, so no.
Yeah. From your HOA? Good. Wow. That is a very active HOA. Then maybe you can get those changed if you run for the HOA president. Any questions or concerns or changes you want to see to any of those?
Did you have anything else, Ron, or that was?
No, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ron. Anybody else input on that?
Okay, chapter 7 is what's left of, or this next section is chapter 3. Did I skip? I skipped one. So what you have here is what's left in Chapter 3 after I've taken out all of the other section and put them in the subdivision ordinances. It just provides the procedure for amendments and rezones. One of the things that I did just about an hour ago was change the title to the chapter because I had it Land Use Regulations and Zoning Map Amendments, and I realized that it's really referring to amendments of the land use regulations and the zoning map, both of those two things. So I moved amendments to the head of the chapter title, amendments to the land use regulations and zoning map. But I don't have any other changes from what you've previously seen. Any questions on what's left of those, of that section? Okay, and the very last one is what's left in the conditional use section. So what this leaves is basically takes out everything where it says that a subdivision is a conditional use, and just leaves the conditional use permit process in place, talks about the requirements for the applications. So there's some of the things that are new in here. Those are new underlined language. Because there's conflicting information. Like in some parts of our code said Planning Commission had the authority to approve conditional use permits, and then other places said the City Council approved conditional use permit. We've always approved them by the Planning Commission, except for when they're a subdivision. That was kind of why they had the two different sections that conflicted, because the subdivision said a subdivision is a conditional use permit and they get approved by the City Council, and now that's changed. What this does leave in place is the performance standards that we use for issuing a conditional use permit. The next step to this section will be for us to go through those. Actually, I want to take out where it says City Council on page 9. I need to take out the references to City Council for planning for the conditional uses. But and I'm going to circle that. The next step will be for us to refine those conditional uses and try to whittle those down to what we want to actually be conditional uses, and then what the performance standards should be for individual uses. So this would be the chapter where we would come in and say, okay, if a car dealership is a conditional use in this particular zone, here are the standards for that car dealership or that particular. Or if we're going to have, if a conditional use permit is for a factory that makes widgets, here's what the regulations for factories that make widgets should be, or factories that make chemicals. We can think of 100 different ones, but we basically have to establish some conditions on specific uses that we're going to leave in conditional use. So that's going to be a big chore. That'll be a very big project for this coming year, right after the general plan. Or at least when the general plan gets moving in a...
But the form-based code went away.
Yeah. We're looking to get a grant to do a design standards for our town center that will be able to be adopted and will take the place of the idea of the form-based code. So we are hoping that we'll know in the spring of whether we get that grant.
Do you guys have like a priority list of the conditional use that you'll go through first, or just do the whole thing?
We'll just start ticking down the list.
Just start going.
And start thinking about.
I was going to say car dealership. Start with that first.
Well, we were just talking about that today. There are certain car dealerships that are the bane of our existence, and mm-hmm. It's the ones that have 5 to 10 cars.
In front of storage
units. They want to use a storage unit, or they want to use they don't have the parking, and so we want to really investigate like minimum sizes for car dealerships or something. That we don't want these little guys that go to the auctions and buy 4 or 5 cars that are damaged, and then they repair them and they just become junk. Mm-hmm. They're just nuisances to us, and they're very difficult to administrate. And so we want to revamp that language so that it's very clear cut. And then we can make them all permitted uses, because we can say they're permitted uses, but here are the conditions. If you don't meet any of these, you're not getting that business license for that. I hate them.
Yeah, it's really stressing me out today.
Yeah.
I was like, just say no.
Did you?
I said it in a lot of a more polite and code-based way.
Oh, you're wonderful. Look at how professional you are.
And then the next step is, you've been operating without a license. We're going to report you to the state. Let them come and shut you down. Yeah, they're not really good tax revenue generating. The bigger dealerships are better. They still have their issues, but they're not nearly as difficult as dealing with these fly-by-night guys that they just come and go like crazy all over the city. It seems like anytime there's a vacant little office, they want to take the office and turn it into a car dealership, and they swear they'll only have 5 cars, but then before you know it, they have 50, and half of them are junked and wrecked. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's just an enforcement nightmare for us. So we'd like to find some solutions to that, to not have them in our city and really elevate the level of commercial operations that we have.
So would we. Thank you.
Well, you hear that from the public too. There's a lot of comments and reference to all of that type of stuff that goes on.
I'm just going to tell everybody, if you're going to buy a car outside of the city limits, lease it, because the taxes that you pay on the lease per month actually go to the city you live in.
Oh.
I learned that last week. I won't tell you why.
The more you know.
The more you know. Anyway, so I'll turn that over to you for the public hearing if there's any comments.
Did you get the formatting? There was an issue on page 3 of chapter 7. Anyway, there was a formatting issue. It was on the line 91, action by planning committee. Anyway, it was just a paragraph formatting issue. So Dee probably caught it.
I can look at that.
Anyway, I'll just
hand me that, and then I'll fix the formatting. Yeah. There are some formatting things that are weird when it's in red line, and if you try to correct it in red line, then it messes with your auto outlining. Thank you, Microsoft, for thinking it knows what I want. And so it's really frustrating that some things I can't correct until after I take it out of red line, and then I have to mark them up. But I appreciate you finding those for me. And Dee found a lot of them for me, too, so that I can get those corrected.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right, we will open the public hearing.
We've gone past 45 minutes.
That's right. All right, and Dee, we appreciate the edits that you submitted to and all the time that you put in looking over things like this for us. Very helpful. And if there are no other comments, we will close the public hearing and we can move towards a motion.
I just want to thank the staff for the effort over the last several months to allow us the opportunity to review this piecemeal. It just makes it a much easier task to digest. And so there's a lot of work on your part and lots of extra deadlines. But anyway, it was great work and much appreciated.
Yeah, very much. So it can be you. I'm gonna make a motion. It's not you. Okay, it's not Commissioner Holbrook.
That is Commissioner Jorgensen. I'll
okay.
offer a motion that the Planning Commission recommend to the City Council the approval of the proposed code amendments with the following findings and conditions. Findings 1, proposed amendment is in accord with the comprehensive general plan goals and policies of the city. 2, changed or changing conditions make the proposed amendment reasonably necessary to carry out the purposes stated in this title. 3, the proposed amendments are necessary to reflect the recent changes in state code in relation to subdivision regulations. No further conditions.
Commissioner Holbrook, second.
Thank you. All right. Any comment or discussion on the motion? As there is none, all in favor should say aye.
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 Any opposed? And it passes. Excellent work. Thank you so much for all of that long work that got interrupted with other things that took priority. That was a big year. Yeah. That's great. And then agenda item 5, report on city council action items.
The council adopted the planning commission schedule last week, and we didn't have any other agenda items on the council.
There was a Wednesday.
Yeah. One of them.
June? Yeah, there was a, it's from the, there was a change from the primary election date.
Yeah.
Which is different than a normal primary election when it's a city year, because this year we have a presidential election and a county election. There's a lot of people running for county commission. If you haven't looked, just you
there's
should
a
go
lot.
On.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
For 2 seats, I think, are up. Or one, or maybe it's just 1 seat. But Commissioner Elliott is not running for re-election.
Oh, so one of them's open. Very cool. All right, and then approval of the minutes from December 12th. Are there any changes to the minutes as they are drafted? And if not, we can move to a motion.
Commissioner Jorgensen, I offer a motion to approve the meeting minutes for the December 12th, 2023 Planning Commission meeting as drafted.
Thank you. Do we have a second?
I'll second it.
Thank you. All in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Aye. And we are adjourned. Commissioner Moss, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. Great work to staff on that. Thank you.
All right. Hope to see you around the next one.
I'll be there.
All right. Take care.